This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, October 23rd. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Ozarks at Large is sponsored in part by the University of Arkansas Women's Giving Circle, whose mission is to transform and expand women's giving to university programs and research through a collective voice.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, now that the partial federal government shutdown has ended, what effects did it have on Arkansans? Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas speaks to business leaders to find out.
Plus, a conversation with the creators of Breaking Through, a new documentary that profiles openly gay elected officials in the United States. Also, a preview of a free health clinic in Fayetteville, and we learn what it takes to be a rodeo queen.
But first, as expected, former North Little Rock Mayor Pat Hayes yesterday announced his candidacy for the 2nd District Congressional seat. Surrounded by supporters outside the Patrick Henry Hayes Senior Center, he said it was his outrage over the federal shutdown this month that prompted him to get into the race for the Democratic nomination.
16 days in October was a travesty. You know, I wasn't thinking about running for Congress in the latter part of September because I didn't think they would do what they did. We don't do that at City Hall. You know, we never have. We look to solve solutions. There's no such thing in cities around the state and around the country as Republican crime and Democratic garbage.
Hayes says unlike many in Congress, he would be willing to work with people on the other side of the aisle to solve the nation's problems. One key contradiction to his party was Hayes told reporters he would not have voted for the federal health care law as the legislation ended up. Hayes is the first candidate to announce for the seat. Congressman Tim Griffin said Monday he would not run for re-election so that he can spend more time with his family.
Crawford County officials are eyeing a possible sales tax issue to put on the primary election ballot in May. County Judge John Hall says he's in favor of putting a 1-cent sales tax before county voters for a new jail. 3/4 of that 1% tax would be temporary and would go toward construction, while the remaining 1/4 cent would permanently go toward operation of the jail. Hall says 3 things must be decided before the issue goes before voters.
First off, what we're going to build, exactly what we're going to build. Secondly, we got to have a place picked out to where we're going to put it. And thirdly, we've got to have exactly how much it's going to cost. Right now, we have a estimated scenario of what it will cost. And so those are 3 things that have to be done. At that time, we have advertised now for credentials already. You know, the engineers come in and we'll select one of those in the next 3 or 4 weeks to design whatever we think we need. And then we'll have to move forward, and we have a quorum court that's sitting there that says we have 13 members. They have to approve the ballot, put it on the ballot.
Hall says the need for a new jail arises from the fact that the population in the county has doubled since the current jail was built, leading to capacity issues and inmates being housed at other county jails. This isn't the first time that the county has asked for a sales tax increase to build a new jail. Hall says voters have previously rejected 3 other sales tax issues for public safety improvements.
The chances, I think, of it passing are very slim, and that's one reason I would rather put it on a primary election, because the election's being held anyway, and the cost of the election is already being taken care of, so it's not going to cost the people in my county, my taxpayers, $40,000, whichever way it goes, and we can't use public money to advertise for it, so actually, in reality, that's going to be an issue that's going to be put on the ballot, and it's going to be presented to the people, and we're not going to be out a lot of money on it. Now, whether it passes or not will be what kind of job that we and myself, the sheriff, can do to convince the people that we need it, and then we'll see what happens.
Aside from cost savings, Hall says a higher voter turnout during the primary election would get a wider variety of voters weighing in on the issue. Also, putting the sales tax issue on the primary ballot helps the county avoid scheduling conflicts with other elections, such as the Alma sales tax renewal election in March and primary and general school elections.
The Ozark campus of Arkansas Tech University has received full approval for its associate degree in nursing program from the State Board of Nursing. Full approval is the final step in a 3-phase approval process for nursing programs. The school received prerequisite approval in 2011, and in January of 2012, the nursing board gave the school initial approval for the registered nursing program. Teresa Fontaine, the program chair for the registered nursing program at ATU Ozark, says the first class of students started last fall and graduated in spring of this year.
What full approval means is that the State Board of Nursing came back and looked at that first cohort of students and said that we had satisfied all of the requirements that they wanted us to have. We had all of the facilities in place for our students to do clinicals at. We had good pass rates on our students that took the NCLEX, which is the national board certification that they all have to take when they complete a program. And so it just basically is the gold star saying that we met all of the requirements.
The full approval means that the college can continue offering its registered nursing program, which is subject to review by the nursing board every 5 years. Fontaine says so far the RN program has been successful, particularly with the college's licensed practical nurse program.
Arkansas Tech University Ozark campus has had an LPN program for years and years, and those students have traditionally had to go someplace else if they wanted to go on with their education and become registered nurses. But a lot of our LPNs are very happy that they're able to stay here on the Tech campus and complete an associate degree in registered nursing. And then we hope that they go on to the Arkansas Tech University Russellville campus and complete the RN to BSN program, which is a bachelor's degree in nursing, which is an online program. So they're very happy that they get to continue with their education without having to leave the Tech family.
Fontaine says the program, which takes about 20 students each fall, bridges the gap between the school's LPN program and the Bachelor's of Science in Nursing program at the Russellville campus, and the overall nursing programs at Arkansas Tech's campuses helps non-traditional students get a bachelor's degree as their schedule allows.
The Bentonville City Council last night approved plans for the $16 million community center. The 80,000-square-foot facility will include an aquatic center, fitness center, gymnasium, community rooms, and more. Construction will take about 18 months, and the groundbreaking is set for 10:30 a.m. November 12th.
Highway lane closures continue today in the Arkansas River Valley. According to the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department, work on Kibler Road and Riggs Drive in Van Buren, as well as work on Zero Street in Fort Smith, is causing lane closures on those streets. Closures will affect short distances between 28th and 35th Streets on Kibler Road and the turn lane of Riggs Drive at Highway 59 and between Massard Road and Chad Colley Boulevard on Zero Street. The closures are expected to last through tomorrow during the work hours of 8:30 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. The closures are necessary for routine maintenance to the street's driving surfaces.
Forecast calls for mostly clear skies tonight with overnight lows from 39 in northwest Arkansas to 47 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, Thursday, sunny with highs from 57 to 64. Tomorrow evening, mostly clear with overnight lows from 30 in northwest Arkansas to 38 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. With all the uncertainty in the economy, at least that's what we hear, business leaders have been dealing with the federal government shutdown, healthcare reform, and quite a few other issues and concerns. Recently, Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas sat down with Randy Zook, CEO of the Arkansas Chamber of Commerce, Steve Cousins with Lion Oil Company and chairman of the Associated Industries of Arkansas, and Mike Callen, head of Arkansas-Oklahoma Gas Corporation and chairman of the State Chamber of Commerce. During their conversation, Roby asked Randy how the federal government shutdown impacted his organization's members.
Roby, I think the most obvious impact is just the sense of frustration that's been driven by the inability of our political leadership in Washington to get some smart things done. People are sitting on go in this economy. We've got lots of built-up demand. We've got capacity that's underutilized. We've got jobs that are unfilled. We've got all this potential economic activity just waiting for decent fiscal policy out of the federal government. And if and when that happens, I'm optimistic that this economy is going to get back to something like the growth rate that we want in the economy to create the jobs that we want and need to get ourselves back to a healthier situation.
Steve, you have a different perspective. Federal government shutdown, how's it impacting Lion Oil?
Well, strangely, it hasn't impacted us very much at all. It's business as usual. I know I've got a daughter that works for the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality. It's affected her life quite a bit.
Yeah.
But now I do have a lot of other friends in the business community that have been impacted. I know another company in our area needs an air permit pretty bad, and it's held up by the fact that the federal workers that work on that are furloughed. So it's a big problem for a lot of people. For other people, it's no problem.
But regulatory, though, that's definitely an area where we've seen some. As representing the Associated Industries of Arkansas, there's got to be some ripple effect there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There are a number of companies that need government action, and there's no government to act.
How about you, Mike?
Well, we're all seeing friends and neighbors who are furloughed, creating additional hardships on their families. What we're seeing the most of is just the added uncertainty that it's bringing to the economy, especially in the Fort Smith area. We have a very heavy industrial presence in Fort Smith, and it is just one other thing that the plant owners and plant managers are looking at to decide: are we going to ramp back up and try to get this economy moving again?
You know, I know you guys talk to a lot of the government leaders a lot. You talk to a lot of your congressional officials, Senate officials, day in, day out, not to mention at the state level, but particularly at the federal level. And I talk to them, too, and it seems like no matter how much talking to there is, it doesn't seem like there's much breakthrough. But I still talk to a lot of business CEOs who tell me they're fairly optimistic that Washington can eventually get this right. Why is there still that optimism there? You guys are CEOs of your organizations.
We've seen this movie before. You know, at the 11th hour, we're going to get a deal.
Well, we're past the 11th hour. Well, I think we're past midnight on some of these deals.
Well, we're close. But I just think we're going to come together and come up with something that works, even though it will likely be a short-term fix. It'll be a kick the can down the road.
Do you guys remain optimistic that a solution gets, that we don't continue every 6 months or so, just like you say, kicking this can down the road?
Well, I think it's a pattern that is going to repeat again in the future, but the political issues of the day are the big problem at first, and then now, after a few weeks of this, the big problem is that things are starting to fall apart for a lot of people, and they just have to fix it. They don't really have an option.
Is it something the uncertainty, is it something you can build into your projections, your business model, or does it just kind of keep you on hold from making decisions about something that you want to let go with?
From our standpoint, it's that you put things on hold. You stay in that holding pattern until you can see a little bit of certainty or predictability out there. It's very tough to make an investment. Especially a substantial investment, if you don't know what the outcome is and you don't know what the return on that is going to be.
Let's talk about what's going on in hiring. I'm going to stay with you, Mike. Let's talk about what you're seeing. We're kind of into the first of the fourth quarter here, typically a time of the year where we do see a little bit of ramp up for people to anticipate. And certainly in certain industries, we see some more ramp up than others. But what are you seeing in terms of the hiring environment out there right now? A, is there qualified workforce out there for the needs that you think exist? And B, do you see employers ready to start pulling the trigger, putting people on the payrolls?
Well, we feel like we're pretty well blessed with a good workforce in Fort Smith. And we've been hit very hard. Those workers have been hit very hard with the loss of some of our larger industries in that area. So we believe for the most part, from a manufacturing perspective, that the workforce is there, the workforce is qualified. What we're seeing as a company is that the quality of the individuals out there for us to hire, especially at the professional level, is just top notch. It is certainly a buyer's market when you're hiring, and there's a very, very good workforce pool out there for our position.
So the supply is high, but the demand is low?
It is for us right now. Mm-hmm. We're not adding people. We're down from 263 employees 15 years ago to 208, and that's all been done by utilizing technology. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it is a buyer's market out there for the workforce.
Interesting. All right, Steve, what about you? El Dorado, the city of gold. Come on.
Well, El Dorado is a little unique, and Union County is for the state of Arkansas. We have a lot of process technology industries, petroleum processing, chemical plant type operations. The five of those that are located right in the El Dorado area have added about 900 jobs in the last 5 years, going on to the prospective jobs in the next couple of years. And these are STEM jobs, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. They're better paying than the traditional older jobs. And the counties come together. Our local community college now has an associate's degree in process technology to train people to run and operate those facilities.
So the workforce is there for
those
900?
Is there, and we're training. All these plants have the same demographics of a lot of retiring baby boomers, and so we're working hard to train the next generation.
Is it people moving into the El Dorado or Union County community, or are you finding it in the existing population that's down there? Do you have a sense of that?
It's some of both, but I think it's mostly existing population.
Mm-hmm. All right, Randy, what do you see on the hiring horizon out there?
Well, I get mixed, sort of a mixed bag. It depends on where you are. As Mike says, they've got plenty of supply of good, competent, readily available folks. In other areas, we're short. We don't have the skills. We simply don't have the body count in some places. So it's a mixed bag. Northwest, Washington, and Benton counties, it's just, you know, pedal to the metal. Every job, every business is growing. They're all hiring. People are moving into the area. In other parts of the state, we see population continuing to decline because there just aren't any jobs in the area. And in lots of other places, as Steve mentioned, this structural thing around the retirement of the present workforce is really starting to bite. We're seeing plants where 20-30% of the employees are reaching retirement age, and those plants are having some tough times in some places finding the folks they need. So it's a mixed bag.
That was Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business Arkansas, speaking with Randy Zook, CEO of the Arkansas Chamber of Commerce, Steve Cousins with Lion Oil Company and Chairman of the Associated Industries of Arkansas, and Mike Callen, head of Arkansas-Oklahoma Gas Corporation and Chairman of the State Chamber of Commerce. You can hear more from the interview at talkbusiness.net. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York, online at mitchellwilliamslaw.com.
And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com. And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. More at AECC.com.
This is folk singer Michael Jonathan. The Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour is coming to Eureka Springs for a huge double show worldwide broadcast. It's Saturday, October 26th at the Odd, featuring the legendary Michael Martin Murphy and Leroy Troy and the Tennessee Mafia Jug Band, plus amazing artists from across the Ozarks. For tickets, 253-7333 or visit ozarkfolkfestival.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Local residents will have access to free health, vision, and dental screenings Friday and Saturday during HOPE 2013. The event is in its 5th year and will take place at Central United Methodist Church in Fayetteville. The event includes the participation of a number of different organizations, such as the United Way of Northwest Arkansas, Seven Hills Homeless Center, and the Community and Family Institute at the University of Arkansas. Kevin Fitzpatrick is a professor of sociology at the university, as well as the director of the Community and Family Institute. He says initially the event was aimed at veterans, but it has been expanded to anyone in need of medical care.
While that's an important part of the population, what we found was is that if we limited it to just that, we wouldn't have nearly the number of people who attended. So there is some focus on the veteran and even the homeless veteran, but I think the veterans generally make up about probably less than a quarter of the people that we see.
Fitzpatrick says the number of patients they've served has grown over the years, and he estimates about 400 people attended last year's single-day event. Fitzpatrick says the first clinic was located at the Fayetteville Adult Education Center, but they outgrew the space immediately. The event has been hosted at Central United Methodist Church in Fayetteville for the last 3 years.
We've worked with Community Meals there. And so we had a captive audience because people were there Thursdays anyway for a community meal. This is really the first year that we don't have a captive audience at Central, and so we don't know what to expect. We do believe that come Friday morning, there'll be people standing outside waiting to get in.
By adding a Saturday to the event, Fitzpatrick believes they'll be able to attract another group of people. For example, those who may be working full-time and or have kids in school. He says the annual clinic has developed into a pretty significant event that is primarily designed to help those who have fallen through the cracks when it comes to medical insurance.
Even the ones that are insured are not oftentimes able to get vision and dental services. Now, it's not full dental. It's primarily triage, who's really the worst of the worst, and can we get them some help? And vision is screening, and medical is screening, although they address acute problems too. And last year we had podiatry, this year we don't, but that's kind of an important thing that people don't realize just how important it is for these folks who are on their feet all day. But most of the services and the direction that we want to be able to move this event is towards fuller medical services and, the kinds of things that even in the case where people might have some insurance, even if they have Medicaid or Medicare, they're not likely to get any, or little vision and dental. So that's primarily what we're able to do just in this day or two.
The event will also allow some patients to have prescriptions filled for free thanks to the participation of a local pharmacy.
We also have Medical Arts Pharmacy who actually will be bringing a kind of a mobile pharmacy with them. And so that if somebody comes in and they see one of the nurse practitioners and they have a particular issue that requires some range of prescription medicine, Medical Arts Pharmacy will be there. They'll fill the prescription right there. They also want to be able to talk with patients as well, particularly those that have chronic issues, diabetes, hypertension, about management, because oftentimes that is a problem. Long-term prescription management, particularly for those that have no insurance or limited insurance. Oftentimes they end up not taking their medicine where they clearly need to. So they want to be able to work with some folks to see if they can't do a better job of managing that as well.
Fitzpatrick says they want to help patients move toward long-term care. One way to do that is by connecting people to organizations that can help them overcome the issues of finance or perhaps transportation that have been stopping them from getting medical assistance in the past. Some of those organizations will also be on hand at the clinic, including Legal Aid of Arkansas, the Social Security Administration, and Seven Hills Homeless Center. Fitzpatrick says looking back at the data of the people they serve, it has evolved.
I told somebody the other day that I think that there are more working poor that use these services that we offer than probably any other particular group. So these are, the homeless, obviously they do, but I actually think that last year, maybe over half of the folks of the 400 or 500 that we saw come through the doors actually had their own place and had a job. But either had limited insurance or maybe even no insurance.
Fitzpatrick says he really believes this clinic serves an important role for a lot of people, and it fills a gap that has widened.
And until the affordable health care is in place, which could be some time, and is fully engaged and working, I don't see these kinds of events going away anytime soon. I'd like to think that at some point that would eliminate what it is that we do, because there would be so much comprehensive service across this country that you wouldn't need these stopgap events to make a difference. But I don't see that happening anytime soon, and I think that what we're able to do, and hopefully what we're able to expand in the years ahead, is to even address issues that maybe the affordable health care is not going to be able to address.
HOPE 2013 will take place from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Friday and from 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at Central United Methodist Church in Fayetteville. Breakfast and lunch will be served Friday, and breakfast will be served Saturday. The event is free and open to the public. Local residents do not need to meet minimum requirements to access the free health services. More information is available by calling Kevin Fitzpatrick at 575-3777.
It is Wednesday, October 23rd, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and with me on the phone is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Too much to do, too little time.
Yes.
Oh, you know all about that, I know.
It's that time of year.
Have you heard about the studio series at University Theater?
I have not.
Well, it's not actually a new series. They've been doing studio theater in Kemple 404 for ages, but they've decided to kind of tell the public more about it.
Okay. That's probably why I hadn't heard about it before then.
Declared a new studio series name, and they're going to open the studio series season actually at the Nadine Baum Studios, so kind of get out there and be seen, with a play called Translations. It is an Irish play set in the middle of the 19th century in the Irish countryside, written by Brian Friel. And he says that it's all about language, in which case, knowing the director is Mavourneen Warning Dreyer, you should be jumping up and down, because she is the dialect expert in the university drama department. She says that being 75% Irish herself, she's always been drawn to this play because it talks very clearly about loss of culture and identity. The premise of the play is that the British have come to Ireland to map the country, and in doing so, they're replacing the local Gaelic place names with English names.
Mm.
Sounds innocent.
Is there
maybe
something not
so
innocent
much
about it?
Well, culture goes mm-hmm. with the name. Mm-hmm. So, really interesting. This is a talkie play, and you have to be willing to sit and listen. But it should be really fascinating, and she's a fabulous director. Showtime is 7:30 Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evening at the Nadine Baum Studios, and tickets are just $5.
Okay. That's a good deal. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The first openly gay elected officials in the United States took office in 1974, when gay candidates were elected to the Ann Arbor, Michigan City Council and the Massachusetts House of Representatives. The number of elected LGBT officials in the country remained small for many years after that. 39 years later, the Victory Fund, an organization dedicated to helping elect LGBT candidates, estimates there are more than 600 openly gay elected officials in the United States. More than 24 of those office holders are profiled in the new documentary Breaking Through, including former Arkansas State Representative Kathy Webb. The creators of the film, Cindy Abel and Michael Bruno, were in Arkansas for the past several days screening their film. Friday, in between showings on the University of Arkansas campus and at the Hot Springs Documentary Film Festival, they spoke to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums. Cindy Abel, the director and producer of the film, told him she worked on the movie for more than 3 years.
I committed to it about 3 years ago and started the development process. And then 3 years ago this month, we did our first interview with Atlanta Councilman Alex Wan. And that was the first interview that Michael joined me for.
And Alex Wan, he has this one quote in the film where he says he realized that his sexual orientation was going to become a matter of debate among some voters, but not his Asian heritage, which he at one point thought might be.
He realized when he was finishing up at Wharton School of Business, he realized that his being gay would be a greater barrier to public service and success than his being Asian. And he had been raised to overcome any obstacles, to work extra hard because there would be a higher degree of scrutiny based on his race.
Michael, let me bring you into this conversation. How many interviews have you done in the 3 years since that first one?
Ooh, I think it's about 30. Is that mm-hmm. close to one?
Yeah, because there are 26 people in the film. And then right. when we interviewed family members.
How would you contact folks to say, we're making this film and we'd like you to be included?
The wonders of email. I knew some of these folks, having served on the board of the Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund, which works to elect super qualified, openly LGBT folks to public office. So those folks were very easy to reach out to. And for the other people that we wanted to talk with, the Victory Fund helped us reach out to them.
I would imagine that you have here with these 26 people, as documentarians, you have a couple of things in your advantage. A, they're politicians, and we know politicians from city council on up do talk. And B, they've struggled through making a decision about becoming open to friends and family and then open to voters. So these are people who have thought about what they want to say and are willing and desiring to tell their story.
Definitely. I mean, but even so, I mean, they've stretched beyond just what they would usually do in politics because, for instance, in the film, well, I don't know if we should give any part of that away with Anise Parker, but
yeah.
She said, you know, she was quite revealing about her childhood, and so much so other people in the room were stunned by what she was telling to the camera because usually they'd be very guarded about that and want to protect themselves. But Anise afterwards was very adamant about saying we need to tell these stories to let them be known for the children that are out there.
Well, you know, it hasn't been that long since Harvey Milk was on the Board of Supervisors in San Francisco and was assassinated.
In San Francisco.
In San Francisco. And a few years before that, Elaine Noble, who was the first openly LGBT person to be elected to a state legislature in Massachusetts, had to have an armed bodyguard, an armed escort, be with her at all times because she had bricks thrown through her window. Attacks were made on her. So given that type of history, it's not always that easy of a climate in which to run. And some people were taught. Todd Gloria, who's the interim mayor of San Diego, California, was taught in his social studies class, if you want to run for office, there are two things you can't be. The first one of them is gay. And fortunately, he knew that wasn't true because he had heard of Barney Frank. He had heard of Tammy Baldwin. He had heard of Harvey Milk. And Christine Kehoe had just been elected to the San Diego City Council. So he knew his teacher was wrong. And yet that was the mindset that he had to overcome.
Any idea how many openly gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered candidates are serving in the United States?
There are a little over 600 openly LGBT elected officials in the country, and that's almost double than 23 years ago when the Victory Fund was started. To put that in perspective, that's less than 0.1% of all the elected offices in our country.
This, while you were making this film, you were also fundraising for this film. This is a grassroots sort of effort. Tell me about how that worked.
Well, Cindy luckily has done fundraising before because when it came to that, I had no clue. But we would, as we were filming, we would be going to events, whether it be Houston or even in Atlanta where we're from, and show parts of the film and try to create interest. And it was very much a grassroots project from the very beginning because it was a very small crew doing everything and putting on our little fundraisers and parties. We would be filmmakers one second, and then the next second we're, you know, event coordinators and creating a place where people would be interested in the film.
It was definitely a grassroots effort, that's for sure. And, you know, people gave everything from $5 to $5,000 and everybody in between. And the great thing about this is that people with whom this resonated gave everything they had to it, whether it was their time, their talent, airplane miles, hotel points, their bed, bought us dinner. You know, all those things go into creating a budget. And still, we had a very micro budget along the way. And, you know, as Michael said, we would go to a place and often the elected officials would help us do some fundraising. Kathy Webb did that with us here.
State rep.
Former state rep Kathy Webb. And the mayor of Houston, Anise Parker, she and her partner Kathy opened up their home so some friends could do a fundraiser there.
Houston, fourth, depending on what data you look at, third or fourth largest city in the United States. And there was some nasty campaigning against her solely based on the fact that she was not straight. But the city of Houston elected her.
They elected her twice.
Yeah.
And right now she's in a race where she's again being attacked. Now, they say that it's not about her being a lesbian, that it's about her pushing a quote-unquote gay agenda.
I think there is a knee-jerk reaction to think most gay, lesbian, most LGBT candidates are liberal Democrats. And, of course, on city levels, many times you don't decide, you don't have to announce whether you're a Republican or Democrat. But you find that it goes across the political spectrum, across all ideologies, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, even in our film, we do have – well, we don't make it a political film, but right. There are Republicans and Democrats both speaking, and you find that, you know, they definitely span the spectrum. And it's not just a Democratic thing when you look at it, though many people, even relations I have outside – friends or family, they may think that, but it's not. It's you, and especially watching the film, you realize it is most definitely a human thing. This is not just a political thing.
Yeah, when you get down to fiscal policy and whether a park in San Diego should be funded or not,
right?
It doesn't matter what. I mean, that's going to be a personal decision.
It really is, and it's important, I think, to have elected officials who are LGBT to be of any political party, whether it's San Diego County District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis, who happens to be a Republican in a nonpartisan race, or Brian Bates in Dorville, Georgia. That is a strong, solid Republican district. There's no way he would be elected if he were not a Republican. So it would be foolish for a Democrat, whether LGBT or not, to try to run. And he happens to be a Republican. And that allows him to go and talk with Republican elected officials. And they'll listen to him. Instead of writing him off as some liberal, he can go in and talk about why actually full equality is, in fact, a true conservative principle.
When Frank Robinson, who's a Hall of Fame baseball player, was named the manager of the Cleveland Indians, he was asked, what is it like to be the first African-American manager of a Major League Baseball team? And his response was, well, I hope someday the second or third African-American isn't asked that. He's just asked, what's it like to be a manager of this team? Mm-hmm. Do you hope that at some point in the near or a little further down the road future that this film is kind of seen as a relic?
I anticipate that this eventually will become more of a historical type piece where people see what it was like back in the day, if you will. And I think that it'll become one of those things that's actually an added asset. It's something that brings an increased sensibility. Joel Byrne says that if he weren't gay, he wouldn't be as sensitized to the needs of all of his constituents, to be able to understand what it's like to be part of a minority. Here's a blue-eyed, blonde, 6'4" white guy from Texas. If he were not gay, he might only see the world through one particular lens and not understand what all the folks who don't come from his background, who don't look like him, have experienced.
So what's next for you guys? Do you know?
We have some ideas. There's some films that we would like to do, and as we've been to film festivals and colleges and those type of screenings, people have said, why don't you do a breaking through in other venues, a breaking through in sports, a breaking through in corporate America, breaking through in faith-based communities? And we would love to do those. And we're at the point where we need to be commissioned to do those.
But have a visual resume now, too.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Because now we can say, this is what we've done. We would like to do something similar along those lines. So, we hope to be able to approach some grant makers and approach the likes of HBO and say, okay, let's help us take this further because there's clearly a demand for it.
Cindy Abel is the director and producer of the documentary Breaking Through. Michael Bruno is the editor of the film. They screened their movie last week on the University of Arkansas campus and spoke with Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums before they traveled to Hot Springs for that city's documentary film festival this past weekend.
On The Next Humankind.
Lincoln said in one of his speeches, if we allow 9 justices to determine our national policy, we are no longer a democracy.
How an extreme ruling by the Supreme Court helped push the United States closer to civil war. I'm David Freudberg. Join us for Justice Denied on Humankind.
You can hear This Week's Humankind Sunday morning at 6 on 91.3 FM.
Kirby Allen was in her first horse show when she was just 18 months old. Her father rode bulls, and her mother was Miss Rodeo Arkansas in 1977. Born into a rodeo family, it's fitting that Kirby is the 2013 Miss Rodeo Arkansas. And in December, she will travel to Las Vegas to compete in the Miss Rodeo America pageant. The Miss Rodeo Arkansas Chili Cook-Off and City Slicker Rodeo fundraiser will take place this Saturday at Nunnally Chevrolet in Bentonville to help send her on her way. Kirby recently stopped by the Carver Center for Public Radio to explain the duties of a rodeo queen.
We are the promotional aspect of rodeo. Anytime talking on the radio, promoting that rodeo that we're at. So not only do I represent the state of Arkansas as Miss Rodeo Arkansas, but anytime I go to an outside rodeo, different state, we promote that rodeo there. We run sponsor flags. We do promotional work. Anything that that particular rodeo needs us to do is what we do.
She likens it to being a liaison. Competition is similar to Miss Arkansas and Miss America pageants, but without a swimsuit section or talent, which Kirby says she's totally okay with.
Because our talent is actually how well we can ride our horses. So whenever I go to Las Vegas to compete for Miss Rodeo America, we don't get to take our own horses. We have supplied horses. So they could be stock contractor horses, pickup men horses, something that you might not switch leads very well. It's going to be broke, but it's not going to be a traditional really, really nice horse. So they're nice, don't get me wrong, but so we don't know what we get on.
Rodeo queening for 11 years. She says knowing how to ride anything she has put on is very important.
I literally try to hop on anything I possibly can. The past 2 weeks, I've worked at the Springdale Sale Barn, and I have a friend there that he has two. They're actually really nice horses. But I just hopped on, and I'm able to work cattle there and ride different horses. That kind of helps you be prepared to not ride something of your own. And I've been to a lot of rodeos over the United States, so I've been able to get on a ton of different horses. And that's you just try to get on as much as possible.
In the national competition, there will be 11 horses in the draw and 32 girls. Not every horse will be the same. One might not be able to stop. Another might not be able to turn. One might be more excitable than the next. Kirby says that it is pretty nerve-wracking. There are other portions to the week-long competition, such as speech, modeling, personality, interviews on horsemanship, and current events. Four judge the contestants, usually a former Miss Rodeo America, a representative of the American Quarter Horse Association, and two others. She has been the last few years, so she knows what to expect and to see what the competition is all about.
People ask, okay, so what are you doing for school? And I tell them, oh, well, I'm enrolled at the PRCA, the Academy of the PRCA.
That's the Professional Rodeo Cowboys Association.
Because I literally, 8 hours a day, I get up and it's my job to look through a 636-page media guide, trying to learn everything I can about the PRCA to prepare myself to win Miss Rodeo America. And I've been doing that for years. So it's not something that you can just wake up one day and say, I'm going to become Miss Rodeo America. It's work. It's a lot of work to be able to prepare to compete there.
Kirby is actually an agri communication student at the University of Arkansas, though she has taken 2013 off in order to fulfill her duties as Miss Rodeo Arkansas. This year, Kirby has not only been to rodeos in the state. She estimates she has traveled 30,000 miles to about 25 rodeos in places such as Colorado Springs, Ogden, Utah, Cheyenne, Wyoming, Kissimmee, Florida. And when Kirby is representing as Miss Rodeo Arkansas, it is important that people know who she is. As she sat in the studios at KUAF, she was decked out in her regalia, including her cowboy boots.
You always have a banner telling you what you are. You know, I'm Miss Rodeo Arkansas. My banner says Miss Rodeo Arkansas. My hat is a part of me. If I didn't have my hat on, I joke because I don't know how to dress normal anymore. You know, I don't know how to wear street clothes. It's important that you have your hat and your crown and your banner so people know who you are. I travel so much as Miss Rodeo Arkansas. It's hard to transition from Miss Rodeo Arkansas to just everyday Kirby going to hang out with some friends. So,
on the crown of her black cowboy hat rests a large, shiny silver and gold tiara bearing her title, Miss Rodeo Arkansas.
Well, this is actually removable, so it comes off. I have many, many hats. This is my black hat, and I have a charcoal gray hat, white hat, brown hat. So I gotta always coordinate. We have different colored banners too. So this one's silver, and so sometimes I put gold and turquoise. You match it all to your outfit. Cool. It's pretty awesome. It lets you individualize yourself because every girl wears a cowboy hat, but this kind of lets you be, I'm curvy. This is what I want to wear.
State competitions take place in August, though it is a lady-in-waiting program, and the 2014 queen has yet to bear her tiara. Kirby Allen is the 2013 Miss Rodeo Arkansas. She will head to Las Vegas in December for the 2014 Miss Rodeo America pageant. A chili cook-off and City Slicker Rodeo fundraiser will be held in her honor this Saturday at Nunnally Chevrolet in Bentonville.
We're pretty excited about the City Slicker Rodeo. People always look at me like, what's a City Slicker Rodeo? We're going to have a dummy roping, and it's for kids, too, so it's a big family event. So we're going to have a competition to see who could rope the dummy the best. We're going to have a mechanical bull contest, so come out if you can ride a mechanical bull and you think you're good. We're actually going to have a few dancers come, and there's going to be a flamenco dancers, square dancers, and then we're going to have a pony rides. It's going to be a big deal. It's going to be a lot of fun.
This is Ozarks at Large.
This is a recording of Backroad Anthem inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio from earlier this year. The country band was performing in Oklahoma City this weekend when they had a trailer containing their musical gear stolen. Yesterday, I reached guitarist Craig Strickland by phone to find out more.
So we played two nights this past weekend at Toby Keith's. I love this bar in Oklahoma City. And every time we've been to Oklahoma, it's been awesome. And Friday night went good. And then Saturday night, we were staying at the Holiday Inn in Oklahoma City, and we come down the stairs Sunday morning early because we have load-in for opening for Duck Dynasty Sunday in Springdale, Arkansas. And so we come down 7:30 in the morning. Trailer is gone. A 4x6-foot trailer carrying about $50,000 worth of our musical instruments and gear that was all personally owned by, you know, each one of us. And it wasn't insured because, you know, we're doing this, basically we're a year old band. And so, you know, the guitar I was using was the guitar I was using for praise and worship. And you know, but the big thing was the fiddle, and the fiddle, you know, valued at probably $17,000 is just, that's just the heartbreaker. And so now we're trying to do everything we can to figure out where it's at.
Were you able to play at Duck Dynasty, the Duck Dynasty event at Arvis Ballpark on Sunday?
Yes, that's really cool. So we had like 3 hours probably to drive back from Oklahoma City, and we just got on the phones and were able to, through, you know, the Northwest Arkansas community, just kind of hold hands together and get enough gear to be able to play that show. And so now we're trying to, you know, gather what we need for the next step. You know, what's the next step? Do we wait it out, or do we buy new gear? Do we figure out how to buy new gear? And so, yeah, we were able to play the event.
So the trailer itself, was it hooked up to your car, or did they unhook it from your car and take it?
It was. Yeah, so we backed up a car to the back of the trailer. You know, we had to park on the side of the hotel, so because it was so busy, the hotel was so busy, and the side of the hotel, no cameras, very dim lit, and just set up perfectly for, you know, thieves, I guess. And we came down, and, you know, our drummer's car, he was the one pulling the trailer. I mean, they wiggled it out. They popped it off, popped the lock, and scratched the back of his car all up and moved it out and put it on whatever vehicle they got and just drove off.
Well, people can be on the lookout for this. What color is it? Are there any distinguishing factors, like a bumper sticker, or do you know the license plate?
Absolutely. It's a very small white 4x6-foot trailer with the letters BA for Backroad Anthem on the back, and probably 5x6 inches, and the red on the back center of the trailer. And this trailer doesn't look like any, you know, regular trailer. It's a custom built trailer, so it's, you know, it's pretty unique, but you know, who knows where it's at now. So, you know, if you see it, obviously call the police and, you know, go from there.
Is there any sort of, I know when this has happened before, there have been fundraisers. Are there any sort of fundraising efforts underway yet? Or are you still kind of waiting it out?
So we've set up a PayPal donation kind of headquarters on our Facebook page. And so everybody can go to Backroad Anthem, search that on Facebook, and you'll see the click donate PayPal button, that they can make any donation. And also, it's been really cool because Coach Barry Switzer, the old Dallas Cowboys football coach and the former OU coach, is a big fan of our band and a good friend of our band. and a good friend of our fiddle player, Eric, and he has put up a $10,000 reward. No questions asked. If the fiddle is returned, somebody's getting $10,000. So hope that it gets returned.
That's great. What is so special about this fiddle? Is it older or?
Yeah. Well, actually, our fiddle player is in the car right now on the Bluetooth, so he could tell you a little bit about the fiddle.
Okay, my name is Eric. I'm the fiddle player in Backyard Anthem. The fiddle it was made in 1826, so it's obviously old. Like Barry said in his interview, it was made in Europe. It's so old. It's like we're trying everything we can right now just to get that back. I think that's the biggest thing. I feel like, to me, I mean, I know I have two guitars to my name, and I have those with me. And those fiddles are, those guitars are, I mean, they're great guitars, but the fiddle is something different, really is.
Was it passed down through your family, or you just happened to end up with an old one?
I've had this fiddle since I was about 8 years old, so I've had it for a long time.
Do you guys have any gigs lined up for this weekend?
Yeah, we have a wedding coming up where we're all trying to figure out, you know, gear to be able to use. Luckily, you know, we've gotten a lot of Facebook messages like, hey, I will give all three violins that I own. They might be junk, but I'll give them if he needs them, like, you know, stuff like that. So it's been really cool to see everybody trying to give us, you know, musical gear and stuff. But yeah, we have a wedding this weekend. And then after that, this is where it's going to get kind of tricky because next weekend we go to Kansas City. And then Saturday next weekend, we go to Columbia, Missouri. And so we're going to need to, you know, really find gear immediately to be able to keep pursuing our dream.
That was Craig Strickland and Eric Dysart, two members of the band Backroad Anthem. For more information on their stolen gear, you can visit facebook.com/backroadanthem.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, a food scientist explains why products labeled pumpkin are everywhere, but real pumpkin, not so much.
You've got a coffee cup, some coffee in it, the decoction, then you've got the cream, the sweetness, etc. If you put a dollop of pumpkin into it, it would taste awful.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen this afternoon from 1 to 3 to KUAF Public Radio.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents This Land, Picturing a Changing America in the 1930s and 40s, on view now through January 6th. The exhibit is accompanied by a musical audio tour featuring music curated by the Fayetteville Roots Festival. This audio tour is available via the Crystal Bridges app, downloadable from the iTunes App Store. CrystalBridges.org for more information.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Harrison.
I have a couple of congratulations to offer this morning. I want to congratulate Alice Walton. We were just talking about Crystal Bridges. She's the founder and chairwoman of the museum's board of directors. Last night, she was presented with the Smithsonian Institution's Archives of American Art Medal. Each year, the award honors leaders in the field of American art. So congratulations.
Yes, and more congratulations. After upsetting the number 1, number 4, and the number 7 teams in the land with a second place finish at the Wisconsin Adidas Invitational, the University of Arkansas women's cross country team jumped 6 spots into the number 2 position in the latest national rankings. It marks the highest ranking since 2007 when the Razorbacks were also tabbed as the number 2 team in the country. Arkansas now prepares for the 2013 SEC Championship, which will be held in Gainesville, Florida on Saturday, November 1st. The women's 8K is slated for a 9 a.m. start. For more information on Arkansas women's cross country, follow at RazorbackTF on Twitter.
And just a reminder, the Graduate NWA Come Back to College Fair is today from 4:30 to 8 at the Jones Center in Springdale. So if you have some credits, college credits, and just are lacking a few to get your bachelor's degree,
right,
then this might be the place for you to go and check out what you need to do to do that. So that's this afternoon, 4:30 to 8 o'clock at the Jones Center in Springdale. Also, this reminder, tomorrow is the first day of the on-air portion of our fall on-air fundraiser. So you'll be hearing us live on Ozarks tomorrow. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Have a good Wednesday.